This is RSB and the Update, episode 578, recorded Friday, July 29th, 2016. Wobble, wobble, wobble. Hello, everybody, and thank you for listening to this episode of RSB&B Update. I am back this week, as promised. Hopefully, you guys enjoyed our little special on skilling last week with Dave and Parnassius. Lots of good reviews about that episode coming in, so I can only imagine that that's going to continue happening going forward. But, as I mentioned, I was away last week, but we're back this week, and we're going to be discussing the whole boatload of updates that came this week, and some unfortunate news that broke early today from Jagex's land. But before we do that, you'll note that, it's July now, and we did have a new co-host swap over in the works for a couple weeks, and we've been teasing that. So this week is the first episode of Quarter 3 2016 RSB&B Update, officially, and I am happy today that I can announce the co-host for Quarter 3 2016. So, this is a person you guys have heard a few times before on RSB&B Update. He anchored last year's RuneFest coverage with me for that whole three-hour-long episode or whatever it was. And he also has been around the RS community for quite some time, runs a clan, and is in general a very, very smart person. And I think you guys will enjoy what we have to discuss this coming quarter. So I think you guys have probably narrowed it down to who it is, but if not, I am pleased to announce that the co-host for 2016, third quarter of RSB&B Update, is Sirion from Clan Quest.
Ooh, surprise, surprise.
You think it was a surprise to most people?
I wouldn't know, to be honest. Not after what you just said, probably.
Yeah. Was it a surprise to you when I approached you?
It was an honor, at least. But yeah, we did a lot of episodes together, so it was not entirely a surprise, but definitely happy to be on the show.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it makes sense to have you on for this quarter, because, we really haven't touched too much on clans and whatnot in the past RSB&B Update history. So if there's a clan update, or maybe we might do a special focus episode on clans or something to that effect, you would be a prime person to discuss that with. So that's definitely one positive about it. Other great things about Sirion that he's going to bring to this show is that, much like me, he really enjoys the technology side of things. He's big into science fiction, Star Trek, all that other kind of good stuff. So, I just introduced you, but is there anything else you'd like to tell the listeners about you before we get started today?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Well, I guess I could say I sort of like quests.
Oh, right. Of course. That's the name of the clan, Clan Quest.
Yeah.
Which is
I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, yeah. We run a great organization there, Clan Quest. If you really enjoy questing, it's the clan to be in, I think. And I think isn't it one of two, really dedicated questing clans out there?
I think there are two other ones.
Yeah.
But I mean, each is very different in nature. And
yeah.
I think Clan Quest is really focused on the whole questing experience, everything around it, and enjoying the game
for
what it has to offer, and helping other people, even new people, to ease into the game and ease into the awesome things that it has to offer. So it is unique in its respect.
Yeah, and I mean, we're not assholes. We don't have any huge regulations or anything like that. Oh, you need to do X, Y, Z in order to be in the clan. You need to stand on one foot and then twirl around on the head in front of the High Council member. No,
you just have to sell your soul to Brassica Prime. That's basically the only entry requirement.
Yeah, I've had Draz on the show before, and I've let him explain that theory.
All right, good.
Whether or not people took much from that, I don't know, but we'll leave that for another day. So
I will try to remind the listeners about every week or so about how great cabbage is.
Right on, right on. I think there are some listeners in the group that definitely agree with that. So shall we get started with this week's update?
Sounds good.
So this is the ARC. The players voted for this at the beginning of the year, and Jagex has delivered the first part of it, including three islands and, well, the Uncharted Isles, which we'll get to in a little bit. The ARC, of course, starts providing you have one level 90 skill, one of the level 90 skills from player on ports, that is, and you have done the little mini quest in which you assemble your crew. And then following that, you're free to adventure to the islands of the ARC. I hear a bit of a chuckle there.
It sounds really excited. I just have not been able to experience it yet myself. So.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, you just got back yesterday from a big worldwide round trip to Ireland. So,
It's a bit like the ARC, really.
Oh, yeah, yeah. See, so you were getting real life experience there.
That's how I see it.
Exactly. So there's a set of islands here. They're each tailored to various things. So first one is the trade hub of Waiko, which is basically a trading post and where everyone first sets foot in the ARC. There's various stores that you can sell things to that you've fished or you've mined or you've hunted. And then you get chimes for them, the ARC's currency. And then you can use that currency to buy things there. Like one of the first things you'll buy, for example, is access to the bank. Believe it or not, they don't have bank access there by default. You also need to buy access to the ranges on the various islands. And you also use your currency for accessing the Uncharted Isles, but we'll get to that in just a little bit. So the first island of Waiko, just a trading hub. Bamboo is there, and also a number of other NPCs that you can talk to, which I imagine will have some significance later on once we get the first ARC quest, probably at some point in 2017, I'd venture, based on the normal pacing of things. So there's that. You also start the mini quests on Waiko, which continue the slaver line as mentioned in Player on Ports. And then, of course, aside from that, tasks generate chimes, and then access the Uncharted Isles, which is where the real wealth of the ARC comes from. So do you have any thoughts on Waiko, or should I move on to Whale's Maw?
It sounds like what sounds really interesting is, well, first of all, the completely separate economy, right?
Right.
It everybody starts at exactly the same place. If you look at most of the update releases in RuneScape, people with a lot of wealth just throw a lot of money at it and they sprint to the end.
You can't do that here because everything here is untradeable.
That sounds really interesting to me. And I hope that Jagex will look at how it works and hopefully we'll see more of it in future updates.
Yeah. And, you know, in some ways I think that the ARC is kind of a little bit of a test tube for ways of releasing other updates in RS. And, you know, whether or not the players agree with that, I don't know. I think at this point the players are very picky as to the kind of updates that come out and what happens with them. Mm. So,
I mean, this is not really the first kind of this update. We also have MassCap, for example, which also has the currency on MassCap.
I can't even remember.
And also the build-up of reputation with the
right.
Gobi.
Yeah.
So these are things already that exist in the game, so we can also look upon the ARC as an iteration of what MassCap was.
Very good point, very good point. And, you know, a very important thing to underscore is that the ARC is not heavily combat-focused, much like MassCap is. So there's lots of people out there that are happy about that. And then there's some people who are raising questions during the week, but we'll get to that a little bit later. So the second island is Whale's Maw, which is the fishing and hunter island. Obviously, you can fish for things there. And then what you do with the fish is you convert them to fish oil, and then you can sell them off. You can also eventually create something called shark soup, which is kind of like rocktail soup, I guess. But it's not as strong.
Wasn't shark soup an item that was actually in the game for a while because it was planned as part of the ports update? I think I remember that it was part of the G or something.
Yeah, you're right. You're entirely right about that. So
there you go.
I don't remember when it came in, but I do remember seeing that in our Grand Exchange logs. So,
yeah.
Was discovered by a member of Clan Quest, if you use the polishing perk on a fishing rod-o-matic and you fish on Whale's Maw, you can get the much desired wobble gong fish, which is in what?
Yeah.
I mean, it's Jagex, and of course they're going to do things like that.
Yeah.
But wobble gong is a very high level fish and gives a great amount of XP when you fish it. And you can do this by, of course, using the polishing perk on a rod, which, I mean, you never really expected that you would, you know, outright use the polishing perk for a fishing rod, I don't think, because it just seems so inconsequential in the rest of the world, right? So,
I think it's an interesting thing, this is really also an example of Jagex humor in there, because when you exhaust a fishing spot, it says that the wobble gong are wobble gone.
Oh boy! Well, at least there's some humor infused with this update.
I did not expect any of this, but yeah.
Yeah, and you know, this actually brings up a good point. A while back, we had an Informer article written by Colton in which he was discussing examine info, and you know, these kind of messages like this, I think, kind of do fall in the area of examine info. So it's certainly good to see that, you know, there's some kind of humor coming back in with this rather than, you know, oh, it's just a man or an elven child. So I don't know. I think that's great. So if you want to hear more about what Colton had to say with that, you can find that in informer.rsbnb.com, and that's entitled Examine This, Functions and Favorites. So
I feel obliged to say nice plug.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Of course, you can also hunt on Whale's Maw, which allows you to make tortoise shells. Obviously, not to be confused with the tortoise shells that you use to make the war tortoise. This is an entirely different item. And once again, great hunting XP here. So as you can see, the kind of theme that we're pushing forward here is that the Ark Island, starting, you know, with Whale's Maw, gives good XP, and then that XP is going to be taken up to the next level on the Uncharted Isles, provided you can claim a decent island. So, Whale's Maw actually looks really great, and I think this is a time where we should appreciate the NXT client and what that brings to the game, because without NXT, you wouldn't be able to take in half the scenery around the Ark. So,
I mean, the Ark is probably the first big update to really have been developed with NXT. So this is probably just the start once the environment artists start to really harness the power of NXT. We are going to see some truly amazing scenes, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, and I mean, whatever they were doing, they had to add back support to the Java client, because that was actually in the patch notes this week that they added back support for the Arc in the graphical engine of Java. So definitely making great progress here. The third island is called Aminishi, and that is the Slayer-focused island. Contains three levels of monks that you can kill, and these monks Well, I think this is where the whole area of contention came with the Ark. Now, I am just going to jump a little bit ahead right now to the mini quests on the Ark, which are in the mini quest series called Tales of the Ark. Now, there's 5 mini quests here, including the first one that you do at Port Sarum to build your crew, right? That wasn't too bad, right?
No, it wasn't.
I mean, it was the true sense of a mini quest, I think we can say, yes?
Yeah.
All right. So, with that being said, we start with the next set of mini quests. And these mini quests require various items that you get from the Ark. So the first one provides you with your flag, which you need if you're going to claim an island. So in order to complete this, you need 5 driftwood, but you can only get driftwood from the Uncharted Isles. So basically, this is where the grindy part of the Ark comes in, and I'm interested to hear your opinion on this. So when you first get to the Ark, you just start this mini quest, and the woman says, I need 5 driftwood. Well, it takes 250 chimes, aka 5 supplies, to start a basic voyage to the Uncharted Isles to have a chance at finding driftwood. So to get these chimes, you can either fish or you can, you know, gather bamboo and then sell these to the store for chimes. Now, this is kind of grindy, I think, and I'm not sure if, you know, this is the right way of setting these mini quests up. Because you're there and you're, you know, grinding for I don't even know how long I was there, getting my first 250 chimes, probably 20 minutes, give or take. So I don't think that grinding was the right way to introduce people to the Ark mini quests. What do you think?
If you look at what the function of mini quests should be, I think, is to introduce you to how the Ark works, what you can do there, how the mechanics work. It's a good way of sequentially unlocking more parts of the new content to not make it overwhelming, to give the player a handhold where to start. And if you start out by saying, hey, grind like for 20 minutes and then we'll talk again, I think that immediately gives the wrong message of what the content is going to be about.
But that's just to get your chance to go on a voyage. There's no guarantee that you'll get the 5 driftwood on that first voyage. So, it's grinding to the max.
Yeah, it definitely does not sound interesting to me.
Yeah,
I'm just about to start the content. Now you tell me this, I'm like, well, that doesn't sound like having a good time.
And the XP is not good from cutting bamboo or fletching it into bamboo bundles. I'm sorry to report.
No, I mean, from what I understood, the actual value of this update lies in the Uncharted Isles.
Exactly.
And it feels a bit like an arbitrary... I mean, I find it interesting that it costs supplies to do the Uncharted Isles, but wouldn't it be more interesting if the mini quests issue into some of the content around Wyco, and then maybe rewarded you with supplies so you can
exactly.
do that first Uncharted Isle
exactly.
mission, and then script it in such a way that you get the driftwood you need guaranteed
right.
on your first item. That's not difficult.
And
then the player can get an idea of how the content works. And then if they finish the mini quests, you can let them loose, and then you can let the grind start if you want to. Because at that point, they have experienced the basic things about what there is to experience. You got them excited or not, and then they can work towards...
Yeah, that would be a much better way of doing it. And the reward for the first mini quest is 500 chimes, 2 Tej 2, and ability to claim an Uncharted Isle with your flag. So, I mean,
you get the chimes back, basically.
Yeah,
so,
you do.
It is an investment in that way, but it
just doesn't
like
feel
it
like
gives,
it.
It feels like it gives up the wrong message.
Yeah.
I think there could have been a better curve into the content. Ease the player into it, make it interesting, make it engaging, because I think the first thing an update has to do at players is to pull them in and make them engaged, and grinding them is not the way to do that.
Exactly. And I mean, you do get the Tejidi, or however the heck you say that, and you know, that's the rare currency, and you can use that to add onto other things like your soup and whatnot. So, I mean, you are getting something out of it. But these mini quests just get worse from here on out in terms of grinding. The next one, you know, requires fish oil, bamboo, and 450 chimes to get. So, and that one, you know, is ultimately just going to reward you with more chimes, fish oil, bamboo, and a medium agility lamp. So,
I mean, in general, this doesn't have to be bad, because it gives you something in parallel to the extra content, because I feel that as soon as you did the first mini quest, you get the flag, you can just start consuming the content, and you don't have to actively do the mini quest. You do the mini quest sort of in parallel to what you're doing. Like, compare it to, say, the invention tasks or the Slayer contract. It's not something you actively do. You just do it like next to the main content. But then the mini quest name, it's not really a mini quest anymore.
Exactly.
We all know what World of Warcraft do. It's a fetch quest.
Yep. That's right, actually. So, and I mean, people who don't have level 90 plus, because the next one requires 90 fishing, woodcutting, and 91 cooking, are not going to be able to do this and, you know, get 1,000 chimes from this. So, I mean, you're entirely right on that, but it certainly feels like, with it being called a mini quest and there being a tiny, teensy, weensy little bit of lore behind it, it makes it almost feel as though you should be doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the third mini quest on the actual Ark Island Spiritual Enlightenment is just god awful. It took me 2 hours killing the dragon things on Aminishi. I'm gonna learn how to say these eventually, folks. It took me 2 hours killing these dragons to get 3 books, and this was to complete, quote, a mini quest. Now, these dragons do drop some interesting things, like water talismans, water orbs, unpowered orbs, mithril items that I guess you can disassemble for invention. So there are some interesting drops with them. They did hotfix this yesterday so that these dragons would occasionally drop charms. So that, I guess, kind of balances that out, but we'll talk more about that in just a moment. So this quest gave 250 chimes, 3 touch 2, and a medium slayer lamp. So this access gave access to Aminishi's spirit realm and Arhat dragons. So
2 hours.
Yeah, 2 hours
for medium slayer lamp.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Hmm. Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, you could do it on contract, right? That is what you're saying. Play it in parallel to the arc and don't just set out to do it as a quest. And then I guess it wouldn't be nearly as bad. So
this sounds a bit like Master Quest Cape material. Like,
it is actually. They did actually add these as Master Quest Point Cape requirements.
Hmm.
So, there are people doing it for that, and, you know, trim and comp and all that other fun stuff. So, I think that's, right now, unfortunately, what the purpose of the arc has become. But more on that in our final roundup. Now, the next bone of contention was relating to Slayer. The fact that Slayer contracts, people who, you know, might rely on Slayer in the Western world, are not able to effectively make profit here in the arc. Now, when this was first announced, I had assumed that the great amount of people who were complaining about this were wanting, you know, an easy Slayer way out, just much like, you know, we have with combat in the rest of the game, right?
That generally seems to please the community.
Yeah. And we know that's what most of the changes made to game updates these days are all about pleasing the community, right?
Definitely.
So, they did hotfix it. It gives a little bit of charms, but it's not an insane amount, which I'm going to say is good. I think in my 2 hours there, I only got around 300 charms. So, or chimes, or something like that. So, I mean, it's not something where you can just go there to farm chimes and you're gonna, you know, get like 500 an hour. No, it's much slower than that. And I think that's okay. So,
I mean, there's two things we have to consider. And the first of them is that combat should not always be the most
right
efficient way of doing things. So in this case, combat may not be the most efficient way to collect chimes.
Exactly.
The second thing we have to keep in mind is that new content cannot always be more efficient or better at when it comes to training stuff or whatever than existing content, because that would always push the game towards a place where it's easier to train stuff, more efficient to train stuff. So if Jagex releases a new piece of content, they will think about it. What is worth, like what makes it worth consuming this content? And always going back to the fact, well, let's just balance the XP in such a way that it's the best way of training it, is eventually going to put us to a point where you whack a chicken with a rubber chicken and you max or something. I don't know.
That's a great analogy.
I don't know. I mean, that's like if we keep this song up long enough, that's going to happen eventually. But I mean, Jagex is looking at. I mean, it's just giving alternatives to collecting charms and collecting these resources and maybe collecting some money. And I haven't been able to check them out, but I hope that there is at least some reason of killing them apart from the mini quest. But it might not be
Slayer contracts. Slayer XP.
There you go.
Daily. Yeah. And that is the point of this island here. So, I mean, it's a good amount of combat, and it's not overloaded. And, I mean, I don't know if they had to give chimes for this, because when you look at it, there's 9 skills involved in player-owned ports. Agility, construction, cooking, divination, dungeoneering, fishing, herb lore, hunter, prayer, runecrafting, slayer, and thieving. Only one of those is combat-related, slayer. So, I don't think the arc should necessarily have to focus on combat. So,
no, I don't think it should have to. I just think the most important thing is that it has things worth going to. And I mean, it's really difficult to make content worth consuming without just making it overpowered. And I mean, in this case, it's not suited for people who want to do combat. Well, deal with it. Can't make every update about it.
Yeah, and I mean, we deal with all the combat updates every other week of the year. So, I mean,
there we go. Yeah.
It just works the way it's designed. And I mean, like, there's lots of interesting drops from these things. I mean, magic stocks. I mean, I don't know why we need those, and I don't think dropping them is a good idea, because once again, we're talking about undercutting the primary resource economy. So, and I mean, that's once again just a niggle with combat and the way combat fits into the game here. But
I think we're going to talk about it in a bit.
Yeah.
About that in a bit, right? With mining and smithing rework.
Yeah, mining and smithing rework. All right. So there's the 3 islands that we were released with. And then, of course, the Uncharted Isles. You can find pretty much everything we've talked about so far on an Uncharted Isle, except it will be random. There's also chances of finding, you know, rare treasure chests that give chimes and tajidi and all that other good stuff, and bamboo, wobble gongs, pretty much everything you can do on one of these islands you can find in the Uncharted Isles at a higher level, giving more XP. So this is what the arc is all about currently, going to these places, finding these islands, claiming them and ultimately going to them and earning XP on them. Now, with that being said, I personally don't think there's any reason for someone to get up from waterfall fishing or Saren stones or, you know, crystallized skill champas to come to the Ark, find, you know, one of these great islands and skill from them. I don't think there's any point to that currently. Mainly because of the investment time, and the fact is that these resources deplete, and there's a limited amount compared to, for example, the amount of chinchampas that you can find in the desert. So it just doesn't make sense. It's not efficient. Now, that unfortunately means that players won't train with them, but that's just the way players train in RuneScape. Is if it's not efficient, it won't get used. So I'm going to be very interested to see, you know, in a few weeks, month or two time, about what the Uncharted Isles are doing in terms of activity.
So the Uncharted Isles are not a good training method. So let's put that use aside. So then the alternative seems to be that either you need to get some sort of reward out of it, and it's not XP. So it's either money or it's like perks.
Yeah, and I mean, what you can ultimately do with this is, let's just say, you're not, like, the only thing you can really take out of the Ark is the shark soup for a thing that you can eat and use. So the way to look at this is to earn chimes and other resources and buy player-owned ports resources.
Oh, you can actually convert it into player-owned port resources then.
Yes.
And those can ultimately be converted into GP by making the armor, tradable armor.
There you go.
Or scrimshaws.
Yeah. Another reward is, do you remember when the Tetsu first came out, it was green?
No, I don't.
Yeah, when Tetsu armor first came out, it was actually green.
All right.
That is a reward on the Ark, is that you can purchase the green override for Tetsu armor.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how you feel about that.
Hmm. So it looks like Jagex is sort of struggling to come up with rewards, apart from the XP part, which they didn't do gladly, or luckily. So I recall a Q&A live stream where they said that invention was invented, if you want to call it that way, to provide a new method or a new, like a huge opportunity to add more rewards to the game.
Right.
Like new perks, mm-hmm. new items, new inventions. Lots of stuff. They had lots of ideas. How is it that we don't see any trace of invention except for the polishing perk thing, apparently, in the Ark?
Yeah, see, I mean,
As a player, you're supposed to pioneer invention.
Yeah, exactly.
You are the one coming up with stuff. And you're like, hey, the dwarves have this cool call technique. Let's talk to them. Let's learn about it. And let's apply it and make inventions. So now you're traveling to the other side of the world. And you're encountering an entirely new culture. Now, please don't tell me that the Eastern culture is so weird that it's impossible to get inspiration for inventions of. I mean, it's not that the lore forbids it. There's ample opportunity here for invention rewards. So they have this huge tool to make new rewards. It was advertised as such. And yet we're here with a huge piece of content with rewards that are, I mean, that are uninspired.
Like shark soup. There is no point.
It existed before.
Yeah, exactly. There is no point for shark soup because you can buy this stuff easier in the Western world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, why? And this is something I was discussing in our friends chat, the RSBNB friends chat, is what's the point of the ARK metagame? It doesn't feel like there's a point right now. So, I mean
there's
like,
ports.
Unless I'm missing something.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's ports, which is also, like, people sometimes struggle to see what ports gives, but port, at least in a time when it came out, gave the best armor in-game.
Yeah, and it's still pretty
and
damn good.
It's still really good. I still use it. I still use the port weapons. I still use the scrimshaws and the rocktails. I use everything that the ports have to offer. But then you get this arc, which is supposed to be even bigger. And all it does is it reuses this port stuff. And I think that Jagex maybe underestimated the importance of tying this into the game. Like, it has a separate economy, which is really interesting. You could do a lot of stuff with it. Like, the supply, like, having to collect the supplies and doing Uncharted Isles in using these supplies that you can only collect there makes some sort of a new game within RuneScape because it's entirely separate.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually you have to get to a point where it gets, like, where you get some sort of reward out of it. And if you give the ARK so much content, like, give it quests that maybe require, like, certain Eastern skills and add Eastern, I don't know, but that would require so much more content to make that interesting on its own. So you need to tie it into the main game. That's beyond doubt. But how are you going to do that with uninspired rewards like this?
And I mean, we could be, you know, getting all ahead of ourselves here because only half of the arc is out and the other half will come in October, I believe. And, you know, we could just be waiting for the second part to make it all mesh nicely together. And this could just be the great chime gathering phase, perhaps. Like, I don't want to reduce it to that, but
I think that if we are going to see the rewards being improved during the second phase of the arc, it is not because they had planned that in advance. I cannot imagine that they would choose to delay the rewards to a second phase and make the content sort of useless as is. You would expect them to have learned that lesson from Divination when that first came out.
Yeah.
Like,
for example, like, okay, let's just say, for example, we were going to be looking at fishing, at the fishing side of this with Wobblegong. Now, mm-hmm. you start off at one of your claimed islands, and you want to get a Wobblegong. Okay, so, each Wobblegong fishing spot has 100 Wobblegong in it, and each one gives 612 fishing XP. So that's 61k fishing XP for 100 fish at level 96. So it's not going to be fast fishing, and it's going to deplete itself, and you're going to need to go do something else after the fact. So there's no point. Like, you're better off going to the waterfall, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's always a trade with training methods. So there's training methods that are fast, but like are not profitable. And there's methods that are slow and profitable. And if a method is neither of those, then it's not going to get used because there's always a better way of getting either XP or money. So, I mean, the interesting part is that it's limited, right? So
yes.
What you can do is this the same as distractions and diversions, for example, that go monthly? They are really, really profitable. You get like do 5 minutes of work, you get a whole bunch of XP that you wouldn't get that fast otherwise, and people do it. But because you can do it only once a month, you can afford adding those pieces of content to the game. So if you say you can only do 100 Wobblegongs a day, then it becomes something like, say, agility posts in Fifth Dinners. You can like do a bit of content that gives more XP than maybe should be allowed, but because it's limited, it's fine. It even doesn't even do that, and it doesn't even give you, like, I don't know how much wobbegongs are worth, but doesn't even give you a good material reward either. So, I mean, yeah, it's simple math. It doesn't give you anything, and except for great Jack's humor when you finally exhaust the fishing. I mean, I don't
is
know
that
what
really
people's
the best part coming out of this update.
I mean, I don't know what people's priorities are. Maybe they find it wobble-tastic if the wobble gongs are wobble gone. I mean,
yeah.
I don't want to generalize out of my own experience. It's not worth it for me, though I find it pretty funny. But maybe some people really enjoy reading examined texts on exhausted fishing spots.
I don't know. And I mean, right now, the only, I'm going to summarize the arc for me right now. The only part about the arc that is appealing to me today is the fact it's a brand new economy and you are starting off fresh. And it's actually has a heavy focus on skilling right now. Those are my three positives about this. But aside from that, after the mini quests are done, I don't see myself going back.
Am I allowed to quickly cough and say that this came from Power to the Players?
No, I was actually going there. So, I mean, that's an obvious conclusion for this. And quite frankly, I'm surprised more people aren't jumping up and down saying that this is all they get from this. Though maybe that was eclipsed by the fact that people were jumping up and down that combat was not a viable way of earning charms. Maybe. I'm just saying. But. I mean, and, you know, there's also other islands you can discover. There's a daily message in the bottle thing you can do as well, which, you know, each island has various resources on it as well. So, once again, it's all random, and it's almost as if you have become the port's captain. Well, you have, in a way, and you're going to explore these for yourself. And it doesn't really add up or it doesn't really affect the rest of the game because it's a separate economy, though it was designed that way. So, I mean, by design, I guess it has no point to the rest of the game, right?
It definitely seems that way. It feels also feels a bit like a showcase by Jagex. Like, this is what we can do with the NXT engine. We can make awesome new graphics. We can do procedurally generated islands. We can, like, do a new economy. We can, I mean, it's all the things they achieve, like, the technical feats of this update are huge. And I haven't heard of big technical problems people were having. So all kudos to that. But Jagex needs to get their stuff together and in Arc 2, fix this region, make it an interesting part to go to, or it's going to be dead content in weeks.
Yeah, that's my thoughts exactly. All right, moving on then. Following that, this week we did see that invention can now be used in Tears of Guthix and bonus XP. So, all lamps and stars will obviously require completion of the invention tutorial before using them. Any XP or bonus XP which can be used on invention will gain XP at a 50% reduced rate. So that's quest XP rewards, lamps, dragonkin lamps, XP books, and minigame rewards. So you're going to get 50% reduced rate as you would with other skills, which makes sense since it's an elite skill, I think.
I mean, in one hand, it makes sense, but you also have to remember that you need a whole bunch more XP to get to 99 already.
True. True.
And it feels like a bit of a double measure now. Like.
See,
an XP lamp right now is going to be a drop on a glowing plate. It's nothing.
That's right. But, for me personally, I don't like bonus XP, so I'm fine with that.
Yeah, but then don't. what I'm saying is that Jerry should stop fooling people and then not have bonus XP at all, maybe.
Maybe. But
this, yeah.
Can you imagine the backlash there would be if that something like that were to happen?
Yeah, I guess this is a bit of a compromise, like make people happy, but right. Not actually impact the game.
All bonus XP consumed will double the XP gain as well as with other skills. Okay. Tears of Guthix. If a skill other than Dungeoneering and Invention is below 99, the XP will go to the lowest XP skill overall. So even if Invention, or rather you have more XP in Dungeoneering, but Invention is a lower XP and it's a higher level, it will go to the one with lower XP, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. If all other skills are 99, the XP will go to the lowest level of Invention and Dungeoneering. And if both levels are the same, to the skill with the lowest XP. So, okay, that's fairly self-explanatory.
Yeah, but now all of a sudden they start to take level instead of XP. That seems inconsistent.
Yeah, and I mean, you kind of have to do that, I guess, with the XP curve, right?
Yeah. All right.
Disassembling and siphoning XP from weapons and tools, bonus XP will be used here, and other boosts will not apply.
Yep. That's something I think, like, when Invention came out, was a concern straight away. You can't, like, save up all the things, disassemble, then have a boost, and then disassemble everything with that boost going on, and that no longer works.
Yeah, that's
going to
be
works.
Scary amounts of XP.
And that no longer works. You can only use experience, like, only use bonus experience, I think.
Yeah.
Like, you already built up on disassembling, so that it doesn't really matter to be. So I think Jerix make an amazing call here.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Item XP. Double XP weekends will give double XP to the leveling of your items instead of the XP gained. That makes sense, I think, and that's a fair way of doing it, rather than allowing you to bank them up. Mm-hmm. Certain modifiers are applied to item XP instead of disassembling, including bonus XP weekend, clan avatars, the wisdom aura, and jack of trades will count invention as a skill, of course. So, I think this is fairly okay. It's not, you know, going to result in a huge amount of 99s or 120s overnight, but I mean, bonus XP for invention had to happen.
It's going to help people slowly chuck away to 99 or 120 invention.
Yeah.
Like, slowly, but it is going to happen. And the avatar boost of 3% is going to chuck away some time. And it's like, it's only 3%, but
that adds up over time, though.
It adds up over time. Like, if you only had to kill, like, 100 monsters to level up to level 10, which is, it's way more than that, but like, let's say you have to kill 100. You now only have to kill 97.
There you go.
You have to do that again and again and again and again. And that adds up. I think it's going to save quite a bit of time if you like use your boost smartly. So, really interesting. I'm interested to see how pulse cores will work.
Yeah, that's interesting. Those weren't mentioned here.
Because I have those stacked up.
Well, it says other boosts will not apply. So it's likely pulse cores won't work for disassembling and siphoning.
And they also won't work for item XP, probably.
Yeah. That's a but it says any XP or bonus XP, which can be used on invention, will be 50% reduced. So I guess pulse cores, maybe. But, you know, they're not mentioned here. So maybe they won't work at all.
We'll probably see that clarified at least when they do another round of pulse core promotion on Treasure Hunter.
Yeah, and I imagine they will want to do that shortly because people are going to want to, you know, get XP in invention.
It wouldn't surprise me if in the next couple of weeks we'll actually see a Treasure Hunter promotion centered around invention.
Yeah, I mean, oh, it'd be a perfect time to have some kind of invention robes coming out, right?
Yep.
So there's that, and you know, I think 6 months is a good time to do this with, don't you think?
It like there's many people who have maxed, and there's I feel like the invention thing has really become part of the game. It's not really the newest part of content anymore. So the 6 months sounds like a really good time frame to do this.
Yeah, I'm gonna totally agree with that. Okay, so moving on to the news from today. Friday. The mining and smithing rework has been postponed to 2017.
To be really honest, were you surprised?
Well, I mean, I was looking forward to it, and I think what they had actually looked pretty good. So they only made this decision this week after unveiling more details about it in a live stream.
All right, were you surprised by the community's response?
No, of course not.
And as a result of the community's response, were you surprised with Jax making this decision, being all the... I mean, we both know that Jax is just trying to please the loud
shouters.
Yeah,
exactly.
So,
because...
I mean, I saw this, or I mean... I would probably not have predicted this, but I'm not surprised.
It's like, why? I mean, I think that what they unveiled this week in the video was great. I don't know, like, what part of it people aren't liking, whether it's the fact there's untradeable components you get from mining that somehow need to work their way into smithing, or, which I think is the actual reason that people are reacting negatively to this, is that they are nerfing drops from combat for these two skills, which is something, if you listen to last week's episode, we said needs to happen across the board. And I feel absolutely horrible about this, because if they are not going to be nerfing that with mining and smithing, they sure as heck aren't going to be able to nerf it with other skills. Now, granted, they haven't said exactly what part of this will be drawn back and what will be changed, but I think, and, you know, just knowing the RS community, I think that has to be the tipping point for the reason people are not liking what they saw in this mining and smithing rework.
I mean, people never like change. It's a fact.
That's why the motto for the, you know, first 8 years of this podcast was, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah. This is all right. So this is EOC, right? For mining and smithing. Don't laugh. It's true.
It's true.
It's gonna completely change the skills because it doesn't work anymore. I mean, it's outdated. It has been overtaken by years of content. It needs to be redone. It's the only way to make sure that skilling has a future in RuneScape. It's that important.
Right.
And that should be the first thing.
And when it's unveiled, the players freak out.
The fact is, it's gonna devalue combat drops. I mean, it's not really. They're gonna make sure that things are gonna be like balanced again.
Yeah, of course.
They're gonna replace the smithing drops and the mining drops by crystal triskelions or crystal keys or clue scrolls.
But they did say they won't be replacing GP for GP value. It won't necessarily add up to the same level of GP.
So,
right?
I mean, do you think that they are like, let's just remove the drops and make it... They can't. The game is too complex to make huge changes all of a sudden.
Yeah, they don't just do things willy-nilly. These things are thoroughly thought out and would not harm the game. In fact, they would help them, but they can't make these decisions because every time they come close to making a decision that is going to improve the game, the players freak out about it. And it's because they keep giving them all this rope. It started with EOC, and it's just gone off the deep end here. I thought we were getting better, but evidently after today, we're not.
No, Jagex took the the ropes in their own hand for this update. I was really happy to hear that.
Yes.
Mining and smithing rework.
Yes.
Jerry's was going to design it. Jerry's was going to implement it. And it was going to work. And they would release design documents. And they would like at least do some feedback. But Jagex would take the lead in this. And now it's completely put to a stop because the community says, we don't like this. And the community is not always right. And Jagex in this case really thought this through. I saw what they revealed. And they had arguments for everything. It seemed well thought through. There was literally no argument in there why it should be wrong. And remember this, we're still a few months away from when this was supposed to be released. There could still have been changes. Yeah. They were still going to test this.
And the fact it's being pushed back to 2017 signals it's a massive redesign.
The point is, everything looked like a solid hole. And the only reason they stopped doing it is because the community said, hey, there's one thing you're going to change. We don't like it. But if Jagex doesn't change that one thing that is part of a design that was one solid whole, the whole solid thing, like it's like taking out a few bricks of a wall. You have to restart the entire wall. And it's why?
Like,
it's such a waste
of time.
There's
just a great flowchart here that they had. T70 to T90, smithing and masterwork smithing. Okay.
Yeah.
So you start out with mining. You get the ore and you get the tertiary. You then convert the ore to bars. You can then convert the bars to work orders, which you can do for XP. Or you can convert the bars to standard items with a tertiary. Then you can then convert the standard items to folded bars. And then the folded bars to masterwork items. Which? A T90? Plate top would have been equivalent to a T88 PVM plate in the masterwork items. And what is wrong with that? I mean,
it sounds really, really good. It takes back the you have to buy the components and just put things together or just buy the actual armor itself.
And like, the tertiaries are non-tradable. They're going to come from the mining scale. So everyone has to do mining. What is wrong with
mining
that?
Mining is going to get important again. Mining is not going to be a thing just to earn money by selling your ore or getting loads of experience.
Yeah.
It's really going to go back to, all right, what do I want to make? I want to make, I forgot the names of the higher tiers. I want to make this T90 masterwork. So I need to start with this. And you need to work through all the steps.
And that's beautiful.
Not only does it give you great satisfaction when you finish it because you made it all yourself, but also is there such a variety of content that there is no way that you will be grinding. You will be like going between things.
Finding a use for dragon items and the dragon forge.
I mean, it's brilliant. I mean, this was thought through. You could hear it. They were talking with confidence. They were talking with well-founded arguments. I'm not going to say it's perfect because it's still months away from when it was supposed to be released.
Exactly.
But there is a really, really solid base here. And I think that if we completely ignore the community and Jagex would continue developing this, and forget about the deadline. Maybe they would run a month late because they want to do it right. But forget about the community and let them just do their job. We would get an amazing rework. We would get two skills that would probably become the favorite skills of many people. So if the community is listening to this, which it probably isn't, at least not the people who are like jumping up and down because things are changing.
I don't go to those parts where those people are jumping up and down.
The people who thought about this know how the game works. They know more than you because they know all the statistics behind it. And I mean, I can get pretty angry about this because the community is sort of ruining this
and
for themselves.
I'd also like to recommend that Sirion here has written a game before. So you kind of
have worked
that side of the fence too.
Yes, we made changes that people were really angry about. And we held, we stood there and we said, yes, we know it may not be something that looks like you like a kid. But if you look at it in the whole, it's going to be so much better. And we ended up with an amazing product. So, I mean, trust Jagex for once. That they have done so many good things. They have earned some trust. So just let them go at it. And if the update seems to be, turns out to be utter crap when it's released, then you can complain. But until then, let them do their job.
I totally agree with that. And, you know, I think another sticking point for this might have been that they talked about removing crystal pickaxes.
You get the harmonic dusk and the dragon pickaxe back.
Yeah.
What is there to complain? You're going to get a better alternative. They're not going to make it worse.
Yeah. And
I mean, seriously.
It's even going to use the same methodology that the Ethereum pickaxe would be created using the dragon pickaxe.
Yeah. I mean, I think people are just upset because they have whole stacks of coal in their banks, and that's going to be devalued.
Oh, yeah, there's another
the
thing
Vunite
right there.
It's going to be devalued.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't know if they are going to change the Prifdinas mining options. I hope they don't. I really hope they don't. But maybe they're not going to change those. Then all the it's harmonic rocks, right? The thing where you can like mine a rune rock without it.
Yeah, harmonized ore.
Depleting. Harmonized ore, there you go. So that's going to be sort of worthless because rune is only like tier 60. It's going to be the oddest ore that's going to be worth a lot of money.
Yeah, well,
so,
I mean, they'll have to put other places to get this ore in the game. And I'd like to invite everyone to remember back to RS Classic or even when RS2 first came out. There are only like 4 rune rocks in the entire game. So
yeah, and I think most of them were in Wilderness, weren't they?
Yep. Wilderness, yeah. Heroes Guild, and the Mining Guild.
Makes sense. But yeah, I mean, people have their training methods. People have their ways of earning money. People have their ways of getting armor. And Jagex is going to go there and disrupt that. And people think that is a bad experience. Because people
I'd also
think
like to point out that disruption and disrupting the flow of normalcy is what brings innovation in the real world.
Yeah, people are going to think about new things. People are going to explore. It's what the game is about. Don't just go there and do what always has worked. Go and try something new. That's interesting.
Coming back to the Ark, that's exactly what I was looking to do in the Ark, and unfortunately I haven't found anything yet that doesn't, you know, require me finding specific islands or whatnot.
Yeah. So yeah, all in all, it's something to get a bit angry about. But I mean, I hope that Jagex realizes what they have, how amazing it is, what they're doing, and I hope they won't give too much weight to the jumping up and down. Like, oh my gosh, everything's going to change. Yes, it is. That's the whole point of a rework, and it's only going to be good.
Yeah. And I quote, "The current plan to replace where necessary materials to help with mining and smithing, but not resources where possible." And they will be removing all smithable items and resources from drop tables. And this is the precise reason why mining and smithing, in addition to levels, has become useless. So.
Agreed.
Ay, 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 ay.
That was a bit of a rant, wasn't it?
Well, it was. And I mean, there's reasons to do things in the olden days, right? Like, I'd like to just remind everyone to the way that construction was released way back when. Construction was released in two sentences. No, teased in two sentences. Clockwork cats and chairs that you can sit on are going to be coming out at the end of May 2006. And lo and behold, that's the construction update. The largest RS update ever we just heard of. 3 weeks before, with two sentences in a behind-the-scenes article. Like, why can't we get back to that? I mean, I don't know. I honestly think that behind-the-scenes articles need to go away. And, you know, I hate to say it, just based on, you know, knee-jerk reactions and the way communities work these days. But I also think that early teases and playing through content and all that other stuff like that unfortunately has to go away, because you need to remember that at the end of the day, Jagex are the game designers, and if they can't do their job, well, we're not going to get a good product at the end of the day.
The problem is the business pretensions of BTS.
That's like, true. That's true.
If you say, oh my gosh, there's going to be a new boss by the end of this month, people are way more likely to extend their membership. And in these times, JS needs that.
That's right.
So they're not going to go away and we'll have to live with them. But
I'd rather they increase the membership price, to be honest. Again.
We'll see.
Yeah. But this is just our conjecture. And of course, I'd like to say that I don't know when you started playing RS. I started in 2004. So I've been around here for 12 years. So I know how things work. I know how the community works. So this is my logical assumption as of what the community thought was wrong. Basically, they said that they were changing it because they felt things were being changed that they didn't want to be changed. So, all right, we should focus on something happier now, I think.
Yep.
Okay, so some tweaks and fixes from last week. A really great one came out on the 18th. Players can now reset the Gower quest by looking into the Crate of Returning on the Gower farm.
That's really cool. It makes me wonder if they designed the Gower quest with making it repetitive in beforehand, because you need to be able to reset everything for such a quest. But I mean, it's just good.
Yeah. Also on that same tone, players can now unlock Tim and Crunchy as follower pets by speaking to them at the BTS bar. And this is actually something that I was wondering why it wasn't happening when the quest was released. So definitely great to see that happening here.
Probably an oversight, but definitely cool thing. Yeah.
I mean, I'll take Tim and Crunchy over a bobblehead pet any day.
Definitely. It brings me back to the old days.
Exactly. And then some changes to Saren's spell improvements. Looks like we're seeing some rune cost reductions for Opal Aura. Opal Aura damage cap also increased. Sapphire Aura damage cap increased from level 87 damage to level 88. Sapphire Aura effect now causes Prisms of Loyalty to drain 10% less life points. Sapphire Aura now causes Prisms of Salvation to have a 6.6 second cooldown, 3.6 second with Light Form, down from 9.6 seconds. The rest of the changes are all similar in terms of Auroras. So,
yeah, and that's the accuracy of the Prism of Salvation's teleport has been improved, and its range has been increased as well.
Yeah, and I mean, they had to do this because when you think about combat, combat in RS still, unfortunately, except for a very few cases, is just focused around sheer DPS. So they need to provide incentive for these spells to be used in all combat situations, rather than just the few, you know, where you need a dedicated tank or you can actually use a support hero. So I'm glad they made these changes. We'll have to see what happens with the Saren spells going forward.
Agreed.
Also that week, combat XP selection can now be toggled for individual skills. This means that players can now train attack and strength together without defense. However, you may not deselect every option.
That makes sense.
Yeah, because you got to get some form of combat XP. And you know, that's better than just controlled rather than, you know, going to all of them. So I'm happy about that. Something a long time coming, ever since Legacy Mode and Revolution has been put into the game. The momentum combat type has been removed due to, quote, its incredibly low usage rate. Players upon momentum, using momentum, will be switched into Legacy Combat Mode upon their next login.
Yeah. Which ties into like the next point, that the use of abilities on Chompy and Jubbly Birds has been allowed now, because that was the only use case for momentum. So
okay, I had Jagger's, no idea.
Jagger's definitely looked into like, okay, people are using momentum, why are they using it? And they clearly thought about making sure that people would be satisfied with the game. And I think this is a good compromise.
Yeah. And, I mean, momentum has, you know, just been so horrible ever since release. The damage was so low. I think that probably contributed to some of the EOC hate.
Yeah, I mean, people were expecting some sort of way to be similar to the old-fashioned combat. They didn't want to have the intense having to mash all the buttons manually. And I completely understand that mechanic. It people are used to, like, punching people in the face automatically.
And just letting it go, right.
So the idea was pretty good, but... And I understand there must be a trade-off in the damage output, but it needs to be, like, reasonable. And with Revolution, I think Jagex made a great new way of consuming the EOC combat. EOC combat, so...
All right, so moving on to the patch notes from this week. Master Runecrafting Robes now correctly give 5% bonus XP instead of 6%. And along with that, Infinity Ethereal now gives 5% if the full Master Runecrafting Robes are owned instead of 4%. All right. Not too much to write home about there. But also, the Tim and Crunchy pets have been added to the Master Quest Cape requirements, which I think makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's post-quest content. It should be there by default.
Yeah. Using bonds to change your name no longer prevents use of keybinds. All right. That's an interface issue if I've ever seen one. All right. Well, that's it for tweaks and fixes. Just wrapping up the RS section today, the Golden Gnome Award nominations have been put in place. 50 gnomes up for grabs this year, including in the RuneScape category, Best RuneScape Video Maker, Best RuneScape Video, Best RS Streamer, Best RS Streaming Moment. Then the same for Old School, and then some community awards, including Best Artist, Best Artistic Creation, Best Cosplay, Player Selected, Best Cosplay Jagex Selected, Community Champion, Hall of Fame, and Lifetime Achievement. Too bad there's no podcast.
I'm missing the best podcast co-host.
Yeah. Though maybe they could put that into, you know, Lifetime Achievement Awards for this show.
I mean, being co-host on SBNB Update is definitely one of the biggest achievements of my life. So, please nominate me. I will thank you in my speech.
Okay, we got a lot of work to do for that then between now and September.
I'm confident.
Oh yeah, me too. I'm always confident. You gotta have that when you're dealing with this kind of stuff. Okay, so August behind the scenes. Wilderness month. And
yeah,
Skilling Pet month.
Yeah. It's... maybe it was announced, the wilderness improvements, but for me, it came a bit as a surprise.
Yeah, me too.
I'm like... See,
well,
this
actually,
happens,
no, it's not a surprise. You know why? That PVM Wilderness Distraction and Diversion little minigame thing was supposed to come out in August, but it didn't, and they're doing Skilling Pets instead. So obviously that's why it was supposed to be a wilderness focused month.
Yeah, but still, this is content that was designed by Jagex and Jagex alone. Just gonna put that out there for people to crunch over.
Yeah, well, let's see how it goes and see what the general reaction is about this. Mm-hmm. They're going to be doing a lot of interesting things for the wilderness. They're going to actually turn it into a place to go for skillers. So Divination will be getting a Divination spot at the Sword of Edicts. Mm-hmm. Farming and Herblore will be adding 3 new potions, Luck Potion, Camouflage Potions, and Aggression Potions, and a new Bloodweed Herb, which will only grow in the wilderness. So I'm looking forward to that.
There's also more Hunter, I think.
I'm not seeing Hunter.
I think there's butterflies which you could catch for charms.
Oh, okay. And then updated Bandit Camp. They're going to be improving the graphics on that and leveling up the bandits quite aggressively so that it will actually be a worthy fight now. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, Slayer, you can't get through the wilderness or through a month without a combat update. So special contracts for killing wilderness-only creatures, although these can be lost through PKing, with the progress carrying over to the new owner, which is also, I think, interesting.
That's a really interesting mechanic, but I don't see PK as actually
I don't see them doing that, and I don't see them going PKing for contracts. I go them seeing PKing for the people who are harvesting resources in the wilderness.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think that this might bring some people back to the wilderness extensively, but I don't know. I think we have to go back to that multiplaying PvP strategy. There has to be a reason to PK in the wilderness. There has to be a reason to PK in the clans and the mini games. And finally, there has to be a reason to PK in just the general game economy. So, I mean, this is focusing on one of those, so we'll just have to wait and see if that works.
Yeah. There's also the rogues who can be pickpocketed, I think.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and definitely happy to see some more graphical improvements. That always.
And plus, if it's in the wilderness, that means that the resources are actually probably going to be good, and maybe we'll have a chance to get people out of Prif.
Yeah.
Always good. And the Wilderness Achievement Diary.
Oh, I'm dreading that one.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
I'm not going to do that on the week on release.
No. I'll be doing that on the French world.
That sounds like a solid idea, yeah. Yeah, you can probably understand some French.
I can get by on the French world.
Yeah. I might try German.
Oh, yeah?
That's reasonably similar to Dutch. Should be able to understand that.
Yeah. I'm still working on my Temple Trekking Idiots, though I was sidetracked by that indefinitely when Invention came out.
So. Yeah. No, I need the Dominion Tower.
Achievement. I haven't touched the desert stuff.
So that was like the last thing for Taskmaster. Now this is coming out. I might just give up my hopes for Taskmaster indefinitely. Like they said, you have to do a warband. Like I don't like warbands. I get killed 9 out of 10 times, even though everybody keeps saying me they never get killed. I don't know. People don't like my face or something.
Well, something happier coming in August is the skilling pets. This was, of course, voted highly on in the 2017 survey, but these are actually replacing the PVM minigame that was supposed to come out this month. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good. I mean, boss pets are, for a reason that goes beyond me, really, really popular with PVMers. So why not give people who are as excited and as dedicated to skilling something similar and be able to show off something really impressive apart from Master Capes? I think it's a good addition.
Yeah, they say the higher your level, the higher your chance to get them and earn unique titles, and you'll get them through any activity that you get the Shattered Heart Rocks through.
Yeah, and I mean, this frees up a slot for 2017 content, so win-win.
Yep, farming greenhouse. Then, of course, also the beach is coming in August as well, which is pretty much looking exactly like what we had last year with some new activities, including terror bird racing, daily treasure hunts, a hook a duck game for training your hunter skill, and some truly awesome rewards. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll take part in the beach this year. I didn't really do the beach last year. I don't know why.
I think I did like fishing every day because it was before the waterfall fishing, but it was pretty much AFK, so...
Yeah. Also, they teased in this video a rework of Catherby and White Wolf Mountain.
Oh, it looked so good.
Yep.
I was so happy to see that. They just picked up a graphical rework. And, well, I hope they go all the way down to Ardoin. And that would be, I would be so happy.
Yeah, that'd be really great. So... And see, we're kind of on the path here of looking at what Jagex is offering us, and it's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
So, anyways, folks, there's your RS updates this week. Kind of long, but we kind of had to discuss the important stuff relating to the Ark and mining and smithing. So, on to questions we go. You ready to do your first Q&A segment?
Oh, I get to do the first question then.
I'll read the first one.
Okay, I'm ready.
This question is from Pavel. So, how do you think the JX should introduce new people and returning ones to the game? It feels like the game has a huge amount of content and quests and etc. that I, as a relatively new player, don't understand. It feels as if there's a tutorial, some beginner's quests, and then you're thrown into the huge pool of XP per hour, GPM per hour, lamps, treasure hunter, cosmeticscape, yada yada yada, new updates which I have no clue what they're about, and even about after reading them on their homepage and so forth, it feels like there's a ton of content and guides online, but most of them are quite outdated. Number two, this question came to me when watching a YouTube video. What do you think are the most borderline cheating methods of playing RuneScape? For example, people using real-world money to buy bonds and get in-game money. From what I heard, abusing Slayer, etc. And three, do you think that the game focuses too much on the fighting aspect of the game and too little on the skilling? For example, monsters from Slayer drop stuff that renders some skills useless. Now, seeing there's a lot of negativity in my question, that doesn't mean I think that the game is bad, but that it leaves a lot of room for improvement. Personally, I came back to the game because I think the new and reworked quests in RuneScape are genuinely fun and challenging. Rather than most of the kill X, come back, / get 20 of Y, and go talk to B guy. Thanks for the amazing podcast. Wishing you all the best. I think he hits the nail on the head here.
Yeah, I mean, we have already talked about the skilling versus combat part a bit this episode, but like all the points are so important and so difficult to get right as well. Like, sure, RuneScape has a lot of room for improvement, but the consistency, like how the community looks these days with lots of veteran players and very few new players, you get skewed update focuses, and that's what makes so that relies to your relates to your first question. Like it the beginning of the game, like the early game content has some good part, like Ashdale is relatively new and polished. But then you get thrown into this world, which there's a lot of old quests that haven't had a rework and are a bit disconnected from the game.
Right.
But and I remember reading that when the Iron Man came out, that a lot of people started new accounts and started going back to the start of the game and noticed how bad it actually was in comparison to the late game content. And JX has said that it will make improvements, and it did some improvements, but it seemed to have dried up already. And I guess that if that does not become a focus over the next few months, I guess that at some point the number of players coming into RuneScape might dry up as well.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's just in general a kind of a sense of what's going on with the MMO market right now. But relating this back to RS, I mean, RS used to be one of the simplest things to get into, and I think that the constant focus on what is now the endgame content has kind of taken away some of that simplicity. So I totally agree with what you're saying here in the first question. The things that I would say to do that would definitely help in terms of guiding you early on in terms of a new RuneScape player would be, first things first, you know, to just focus on one, you know, core aspect of the game or the world. Like if you find a skill that you like, focus on that skill for a bit, learn it until you feel comfortable with it, and then move on to something else. That's one thing you could do. The second thing I think you should do is look at the path system in game, which kind of provides new players a direction and a, you know, a good stepping stone set of directions about where they can go and what they can accomplish with that. So that's the path system. And then third, once you start getting daily challenges, that's good too, because that exposes you to other aspects of the game out there. Now, granted, that will, you know, help with your general sense of what RS is capable of, but I don't think it will help with, you know, updates that come out that you might not know anything about. or old updates that are really obtuse. So for that, I would say that, you know, even though we don't do it too much anymore, if you have questions about a certain aspect of something in game, you can direct those to us here at the podcast, because that's something we used to do a lot back when we were all getting started, is discuss, you know, various aspects of the game. What's the best way to do X? What's, you know, the best way to get the requirements for this quest, and so on and so forth. That's something we can certainly do with this podcast in terms of taking your questions.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's part of the game to, like, explore what are the ways of doing things, where can I go, what's here, and the players that have played the game for a long while have sort of settled into certain ways of doing things. Things have become the norm. Like, if you want to train X, then you use method of Y because that's the most efficient. But as a new player, you sort of get the... I don't know if everybody would like that, but you sort of get the chance to figure out these things for yourself. And especially at the early game, the game is not as punishing if you don't choose the most efficient method. You're going to make progress anyway. And you're being thrown into a big pool of content. And it is overwhelming to begin with. But just do a chunk at a time, like Shane said. Just choose a skill, work a bit on it, enjoy it, and then go to something else. And before you know it, you'll know the skills, and then you'll start knowing, like, the places and the quests and the characters. And, like, over time, you'll grow to understand the new content as well.
Yeah. And, I mean, we're always here for you, too. And, like I said, that's one thing I really used to enjoy, was talking about skilling methods and, you know, what's the best way to do X on the podcast. And that's kind of disappeared over time because everyone has grown up and there's been fewer new players coming into the game. So if you ever have questions about that, feel free to send them to us and we'll answer them. And who knows, maybe we'll learn something as well along the way. What's the most cheat-worthy method of playing RS? I know my answer, but what do you think?
I mean, first of all, I think using bonds to get in-game money is not necessarily cheating. I mean, I would never do it because for me it would remove any value from what I have in game.
Right.
Because right now, everything I have in game, I earn through the game. There should not be an interaction between what I have in game and what I spend on it. That's why I haven't bought any keys yet. That's why I haven't bought any bonds yet to turn into cash. So it's not really cheating, but I mean, I guess you can see it that way, but it's provided. But, like, borderline cheating, I mean, I think if you use the ways that are provided to you in the game, I mean, borderline cheating, I guess it's a gray area. But as long as you're doing something that the game content provides for, I think you're just fine.
Yeah. You know, the worst thing that I've ever seen was the lamps that utilize bonus experience and give you real experience that came out a month ago.
Yeah.
We had a huge discussion on this. And,
yeah,
you know, suffice to say, someone spent an entire weekend, you know, purchasing them and whatnot and maxed his account. So.
Yeah. I mean, there are things that are, I guess, overpowered. And that's like the borderline cheating methods that are in the game are definitely JAX provided. It's often a mistake, but yeah.
It is what it is. All right. And then, yes, of course, we talked about the fighting aspect earlier relating to skilling and the mining and smithing update and the arc. And we also talked about this quite a bit on 577 as well. So, yeah, we definitely do think, at least I do, I don't know about you, Sirion, that there's too much aspect on the fighting aspect and too little on the skilling aspect.
I would love to see more skilling content. And, it looks like Jax is following that trend. We are seeing skilling things, even at higher levels. So I think it's not as bad as it has been, personally. But it definitely, there's too much combat focus, and there's still always a big part of the month that is spent on combat updates. So, yes.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, thank you, Pavel. That was a great question, and I hope you enjoy listening to RSBNB Update. And it is my hope to you that we can be as insightful and as useful to you on your journey through RS as possible. So, now we have a discussion topic from the RR Man. I'll let you read this one, Sirion.
All right. So, this is about the mining and smithing rework. Oh, the RR Man asks, I just want to say that this mining and smithing rework sounds great, and it's making me melt in excitement. However, I'm a bit miffed, to be honest. That's a pun, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is a pun.
Well done. I like puns. Please add puns to your questions. There's more, actually. This is because bar invention. Bar. I am Max. I have a plan. The option to reset your mining and smithing to 1. I'm sure that it could be done, as there have been cases in the past where certain levels have been picked out and reset, such as pure accounts a few years ago. So if it was possible, would you give your levels the shaft? Would you reset your levels to 1 and forge ahead once again from the Bronze Age? Cheers, DRR Man.
I think this is a nicely place spot to remind everyone that we did have a vote on the 2017 content survey called Prestige Mode.
Right, yeah, that is true. I mean, for reworks, this sounds really interesting. I mean, it's a bit of a waste to have this rework and then have nobody really go through the entire process anymore. Right? So, yes, this is a good use case for Prestige Mode. And I have the feeling that if Jarrus were smart, they would try to get an idea of how many people would be interested in this and use that to decide if they want to include Prestige Mode or not. Because this is a use case, and I don't think a lot of people have thought about it.
That's right. And see, this is, you know, the same reason why we need to focus on letting Jagex design the game. And that's because, you know, they might come up with an update, but if the players put too much opposition out there, you know, for better or for worse, then you end up with a case where you might not, you know, necessarily be experiencing the full breadth of what the game has to offer. So I think that, you know, if Jagex came out with this and did this and, you know, let people reset their mining and smithing to level 1 and it went over well, I think that the community, without thinking about it, might have just approved Prestige Mode.
Yeah, so, I mean, they could even go as far as actually include it and, like, see how it goes down and then decide to, like, extend it to all the other skills. And this also goes back to, like, the early game experience, right? Like, if you have people playing from level 1 again, you're going to be forced improving that, like, level 1 to level 80 or something experience, and it's going to make it better for new players. It's like it's a win across the board.
Yeah, and you know, I'm just going to echo the RR Man's excitement here when I saw, you know, this video and whatnot, and then today, oh, it's being postponed because too much stuff is being changed. But I really, really like what was said, and it's just so unfortunate that we're not going to be able to see it in the current iteration that they, you know, posted this past Tuesday. So, oh yeah, I would totally reset my mining and smithing levels to 1 if the update came out as detailed this past week. It was just excellent.
I would be on the fence about it, probably. I value my skills, really. And I'm one of those people. I'm working on maxing right now, and seeing all the skills to, like, being like 99 plus is going to be really good. And then, like, have this thing that all of a sudden is level 1 again. It's going to, like, I'm not going to like it. It feels like my character has maxed it, and I would probably make a new account instead. But I mean, I would consider it.
Yeah, definitely. So,
especially once you run out of other things to do in the game. Yeah. It's just going to happen.
One more thing before we move on here. I think that the idea of, you know, resetting skills and whatnot is in effect what Prestige Mode is and what I had intended for it to be. And, you know, if it came out also through, you know, skill reworks and whatnot, because we did mention last week that there's a substantial amount of skills in game that need a rework. So if they did it through that way, I think that would also be a great way of letting people re-experience the game. So.
Yeah, like basically introduce prestige mode per skill once it becomes relevant.
That's right.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, thank you, RR Man. And the last one from Wiley. Hey guys, it's Wiley here with your weekly overdose of vitamin K, the leading vitamin in red cabbage. Last week, when you guys examined the non-combat skills in RuneScape, it caused me to reflect on a few old concepts covered in past podcasts, particularly the content pull for the Eastern Lands. Ho-ho! In it, Slayer was ranked highly, and the PVM content led ahead of the skill and content. But last November, we received a major Slayer content, and people did not want the challenge. Do you think that the general preference of PVM voters and touters in the past has been an AFKable, money-making method, and that if there was an equivalent wealth-creating method in the skilling environment, that the community's majority might not be solely combat-focused? Lore Rise in Fate of the Gods at Within the Light, our great and fluffy empty Lord Zaro stated that there were 6 Elder Gods, 5 of form and 1 of something else. Do you guys think that it's possible that something else is nutrients? And lastly, do any of you have a fear of any animals? Personally, I'm scared of bodily fluidless of chipmunks. Thank you for your show. If you need to save this for a week that you don't have too many questions, you should do that. Makes your lives a bit easier. Well, Wiley, this is a perfect week to discuss this question, so we're going to do it this week.
That sounds good. So remind me, what is the Slayer content being referred to?
In the arc, it's the Slayer contracts and the dragons.
Oh, that's November, All right, so that's the Slayer monsters we got.
Yeah, the Slayer monsters we just talked about in the arc.
All right, yeah.
So, you know, it was ranked highly, and, you know, I think what we saw is a good amount of combat, though it's not overly emphasized in the arc, which I think is great, as we discussed earlier. Now, he's entirely right here that last November we had the major Slayer update, and it was too hard, and that was dead content within a few weeks, aside from, you know, the obviously Master Quest Point Cape challenges and whatnot. So then he brings it back to PVM and Slayer. So if there was an equivalent money-making method in the skilling environment, would people be more apt to do it? I personally don't know at this point, but what I can say from personal experience is that money-making methods in the skilling community generally take longer to surface and aren't necessarily as sought out as combat methods, so that's probably just from the way the game acts. Like, for example, here, when Pryfdinas came out, everyone knew after a few days that the elves were 800k GP an hour, and everyone flocked to them. So, granted, 800k GP an hour was probably too much, but right now, I think there's still a good compromise in terms of GP, but they're relatively high level. And the other example I'd throw out there that's still viable today is divination training for incandescent energy. Once again, high level, but you can do it for any kind of divination out there. So right now there's really only two, you know, surefire ways that I'm highlighting here of making money in the skilling community. So with that being said, I don't know if the balance would shift. There'd need to be a lot more, because just look at how many Slayer creatures there are. So, I mean, maybe if the game tipped its head over, we would see that. But we have to remember that RS has always been about combat.
I mean, the point is, Jagex has actually made this point before. When you do some combat, you put yourself at risk, you put your gear at risk, you can die. And when you do skilling, when you stand there like chopping at like a tree or something, you're not at risk at all from dying. So they can't make skilling as viable as content. It there has to be a way to make combat more viable despite the risk you're taking. That's why harder bosses give better drops. It's risk reward. We can see this shifting a bit. For example, with the skilling content they're adding to the wilderness, they're adding the risk factor to skilling, and that may be a way to tip the balance into making skilling profitable, because not everybody is going to be willing to risk skilling in the wilderness, but it is going to provide a source of charms or the new potions. So we might just stand on the edge of balancing out the way you can make money between combat and skilling.
Yeah. And, I mean, we're not going to know. And, I mean, there was an option in the 2017 content survey to make them about equal. So I think that we'll have to wait and see on that. But I think that it would be the same way either way if, you know, the main GP AFKable was skilling, then more people would be doing that and fewer people would do combat. So, but it's just the way the game is designed currently. So could something else be nutrients or this fifth elder god? What do you think?
Nutrients. Interesting. It would explain things about cabbage, maybe.
Yeah, and it could be, you know, something generally anima-related. So, I mean, it's entirely possible, but I don't know. I think we'll have to wait and see for the Elder Gods quest, because they are still fairly mysterious. So,
the Elder Gods quest is something that was on the 2017 survey as well? I can't remember.
Yeah, we don't know where that's going to rank, though.
All right.
Any fear of animals?
Any fear of animals? Not specific animals, but animals that are a lot bigger than they are supposed to be, like spiders.
Oh, okay.
Like spiders are fine. Just don't make them big. They're not supposed to be big.
Yeah, like Araxor, right?
Yeah, I don't like Araxor.
Okay, well, I'm not scared of any bugs or any animals like that. I mean, unless, you know, like you have something like a bear charging at you, right?
I mean, I guess you have those in Canada.
Yeah, we do. So,
yeah.
Anyways, thank you for the questions and discussion topics, everyone. It's been great. If you want to send those in to us, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com or leave us a voicemail or text message at 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. And finally, we take direct messages on Twitter at RSBNB. Okay, so tech news. Something happened this week. Yahoo, one of the pioneers of the early internet, got sold to AOL for $4.8 billion.
That sounds like a big number, but it really isn't.
Yeah, and would you care to tell us why?
It's less than the quarterly earnings Google just announced, like today or yesterday, I think. So in the last quarter, Google earned more than Yahoo's whole value right now.
And I mean, it's just, you know, a shame to see one of these internet pioneers coming down like this, but that's, I think, what happens when you become complacent. And like, Yahoo has not had any hits for years at this point. I think it was just purely inertia. So Verizon will combine Yahoo search, email, and messenger assets, as well as advertising technology tools, with its AOL unit, which is America Online. America Online was bought last year for $4.4 billion. So Yahoo is unfortunately going the way of AOL.
Yeah, so this is hopefully going to, for Verizon, going to be one of those, like, 1 plus 1 equals 3, or in this case, like 4.4 billion plus 4.8 billion is like a lot of billions in the end.
And I mean, there's nothing really you could do about this, but it's just the way the ball bounces, and I don't see any use for Yahoo, so therefore, I mean, this is its inevitable end. And you know, I think when things are absorbed into AOL, they just go there to die, and there's not much else to say on this.
No, I mean, maybe we'll see something surprising coming up. Maybe, like, with these things combined, they can still push for something interesting. But by now, I think there have been so many new things, and
yeah,
that it doesn't. It feels like they have been behind for a while now.
And you know, just the very fact that they were bought by Verizon and AOL rather than being bought by some enterprising company like Apple or Google kind of shows that they don't see really any value in Yahoo as it is.
No, and to be honest, when have you been to Yahoo lately?
Right.
I think it's dying, and this is just the way to end it. And I'm not entirely sure if we'll ever see something come out of this again.
Yeah, likely not. There's no point. Though they did at one point in the mid-2000s, 2007 or so, have a dig competitor that was actually fairly decent, but didn't really get off the ground. So, anyways, next up is another Facebook story. Facebook is considering removing news out of its trending news section due to controversy. So, that's a bit of an oxymoron there, if they're removing the news out of the trending news section, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a Facebook user, so for me, I'm trying to sort of, I guess, how it's supposed to work. But what exactly is the controversy coming from?
Well, like, here's the thing.
The choice?
No. I think a month and a half ago, it was revealed that one of the Facebook editors and the Facebook editors in general essentially favored certain news stories over other ones. Like, for example, they chose to highlight Black Lives Matter over a news story from Breitbart, which is a conservative-based news company, or, you know, the Mitt Romney 2012 run that was highlighted. They chose to highlight other things over that, and then there was a discussion of bias and whatnot, and that resulted in a huge meeting of conservatives at Facebook's news headquarters and bias trading, which shouldn't necessarily be a thing. And then we end up here today where Facebook is actually considering removing news out of here because they realize it's an editorial change that needs to be made. So they say the potential solution is reflected in a test that the company is running on a subset of users, which Facebook confirmed on Wednesday. Mashable, early in July, reported on what appears to have been a crude prior version of the test, and Huffington Post also noticed it. So basically what they're saying, the trending box has been modified to basically remove features that were controversy. So, for example, rather than, you know, saying what the exact headline is that would cause controversy, the other example would just be, like, for example, Susan Sarandon, politics, 41,000 people talking about this, rather than Bill O'Reilly, TV host, responds to Michelle Obama's Democratic National Convention comment about slaves. So that is controversial, so they just remove that entirely.
Yeah, I mean, this is always, like, different topics. So this is curated, if I understand correctly.
Yes.
Which means you can't curate objectively.
That's right, because it's done by
humans. So that's going to, at some point, piss off the wrong people. Or some people, at least. It's always going to be a group of people that feels disadvantaged, and if that group of people is big enough, you have issues.
Yep.
And the alternative is to not do it curated, and I guess that's what's happening at Google, for example, that had the thing with, like, the Hillary Clinton versus the Donald Trump thing, right? That's, I mean, it's not supposed to be curated, and also that also leads to controversy. So if you are a party as big as Facebook, you sort of have a huge role, and it's really hard to take that responsibility, and taking out the news is sort of the easy way out.
Yep. And I mean, I don't know what the other option is, because people are going to complain either way, and I think it's just people being way too sensitive.
I mean, the fairest thing would be to make it, like, not curated, but make it, like, automatically selected. But that is, first of all, more complicated than it sounds. And second of all, people are still going to complain that their stories are not in there. So, I don't know. It's a social media site and not a news site. So, I think Facebook taking it out is the easy way out. But I'm not really blaming them for that.
Yeah, and I mean, the question is, though, I mean, I'm sure it could provide a great level of, you know, places to find the news and whatnot, but if they're going to do this, like, where does that leave us? We're kind of missing out on what the internet's about, if that's the case. So, I don't know. It's a really tough thing to do, because you don't necessarily want to give people bias training. Like, that's a stupid thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
People just need to either ignore them, ignore their biases, though that's going to be hard for them to do, or people need to realize that they might see things they disagree with on here. But at the end of the day, if both sides aren't being put into the newsfeed, then that's a problem. So
it's a general issue, and I think it's not limited to the internet. It's the same thing with the newspaper. It's the same thing with, like, a magazine. It's like, there's this issue all the time. It's just that Facebook is such a big party, and everybody, like, billions of users see that page maybe every day, and you're supposed to be an example and have a role of, like, sharing the right things, and that is what puts Facebook in such a fragile position.
Yep. And if they can't do that, then they're not serving their purpose, and I guess it should just go away.
Yeah.
All right. Final piece of tech news this week is talking about another social entity, and that is, of course, Twitter. Huge revenue problems and a massive falling down of its stock. Twitter reported its Q2 earnings on Tuesday, and, well, things didn't go all that great. First is monthly users, 313 million users, but Twitter also reported that profits of 13 cents per share on a revenue of $602 million for the quarter, which is lower than expected. Stock also went down more than 10% on this news and has been hovering around there. The general consensus of the investors is that they were hoping on 10 cents per share on $607 million in revenue profit. So, things aren't so rosy for Twitter. Twitter is definitely having problems staying afloat and making profits and, you know, meeting marketing guidelines. So the question then becomes, what does the current CEO of Twitter do about this, and when does he get the boot? Or does Twitter just, you know, continue withering and become another Yahoo in a few years?
Twitter is in a difficult position. It's a product that's still being used, maybe by only a small part of people on the internet. But where it's being used, it's generally a thing people check, like, every day, every hour, like, regularly. It's just less people use it because there's Facebook now, which has way more options, and people apparently are not interested in sharing things within more than 40 characters. So Twitter, I think, has to sort of turn around and think about what are we as a product, what do we have to offer, and how can we serve it in such a way that we profit by it. Like, they serve ads, but not that many ads.
Yeah, and they're horrible.
They're horrible. So, I mean, I don't really see, like, big advertisement opportunities for Twitter. And I don't see people paying for Twitter either. So what does that leave them? You can say kick out the CEO, but that's going to put more uncertainty in the company. And I'm not sure if a new CEO could turn it around.
No. Like, and I mean, it's a fundamental problem of the platform. That's been Twitter's issue since day one. Where does the business model come in? You know, the first CEO was, you know, 90 days after Twitter came out, said a business model will emerge. Well, evidently it hasn't. And I mean, they're just driving people away from their platform in certain groups, speaking on the whole same conservative thing. There was a recent banning of, you know, prominent conservative on Twitter with no reason given, and it has the same issues as Facebook does with its trending platform. So driving people away is not going to help this at the end of the day. And I mean, it should ultimately be a platform for, I think, news. I think that's the way it's got to go.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I think one of the strong points of Twitter is its purity. Like, I go to Twitter, I still use it personally. And I see a timeline of things people I follow have said. That's it. I see what they think, and I can read it, and I can see what they share. There's no promoted posts. There is no weird stuff. All the things that Facebook does, it's not there. It's really pure. It's just people's thoughts. And that is what makes Twitter strong. It makes it a nice product for me. But this purity also means that if that is your main selling point, you can't break that to start earning money, which means that advertisement on Twitter is really, really difficult. You can't start showing me things from people that I don't care about, because then I will stop using Twitter, because I want to read things I do care about, and I don't care about what Twitter thinks I care about.
Right.
That was a really difficult sentence.
Well, it makes sense. And I mean, I think we summarized that quite well. And I think they're going in the direction of Yahoo. So we'll leave it at that.
Sounds good.
Okay. So for the July Skill of the Month update, Divination Flash has flashed ahead. Currently in first place with 17.9 million XP gained. Meanwhile,
it's such a straight line as well.
I know. I know.
That must take a lot of dedication.
Right now, Parnassius and Tim are racing for second place. Parnassius has 7.2 million XP, while Tim has 7 million XP gained. So it looks like we got a race for second here, and with just 2 days left in the month, we can safely crown Flash as the winner of the July Skill of the Month. I know he definitely wanted this one, seeing as Tim was competing.
Yeah, it looks like an interesting competition.
And also, if you're interested in competing in the August Skill of the Month, that has been announced as mining. You have until the end of the 31st to sign up for that. So you can sign up for that at rsbmb.com/skotm.
Do it.
Indeed. So, you ready for some achievements of the week?
Yes, let's do it.
All right, I will start. First up, Sorensen 57 with 120 fishing on July 27th.
Bolter 99 got 99 hunter on July 23rd. I can't do numbers.
Colton got 99 construction on the 21st. We know Colton. Congratulations.
Canard.
Yep.
Got 120 invention on July 16. Congratulations on that. That's definitely not an easy one to get.
Yeah. Dat Engineer, 120 fishing on the 15th.
And Mandy got 99 thieving on July 15 as well. Congratulations all.
Good job. Nice achievements there, especially the 120s in fishing and invention.
Yeah.
Yeah, invention's a hard one, so good job. Okay, so pick of the week time.
Well, this is probably not going to be very surprising.
That's right. So last Thursday, Star Trek Beyond was released, the third movie in the so-called reboot series with Chris Pine. And I saw that last weekend. And let's just say that compared to the previous two reboot movies, this movie definitely delivers on what a Star Trek movie should be. Because, you know, that's been one of the main complaints about the first two Star Trek movies that was done by J.J. Abrams. The first one was, you know, it didn't feel Star Trek-y, though it established a good storyline. The second one was, once again, not Star Trek-y at all, but it did, you know, throw chunks of red meat out there for the base, so to speak, people, things that people would get and understand in terms of references. So the first movie was okay, the second one deemed as not so great, but the third movie really delivered in terms of what a Star Trek movie should be. Now, we need to remember that Star Trek movies, rather than, you know, series, are actually generally action-based compared to what we saw on the TV. So with that being said, there was a good amount of action and dialogue in this movie, so much so that it just wasn't a complete action run like, you know, the first Star Trek movie was. And it actually felt as though you were watching a modern-day original series episode of Star Trek, which is what you want when you're looking into a movie. There are people who will say that, oh, it wasn't Star Trek-y enough, there wasn't enough of the dialogue and whatnot that really conveyed what Star Trek is, but the movies never really did that. So with that, I think that this movie delivers on what a Star Trek movie should be. And it was, you know, just excellent with all the references to past series, past movies, and ultimately building on to what this crew is going to be capable of and what Star Trek is about for this crew. So if you like Star Trek at all, you should definitely see this movie. If you want a good, I'm not going to say science fiction, but a good action movie set in space, you should also definitely see this movie. And in terms of rating compared to Star Trek movies out there, for those of you guys who watch Star Trek movies, this falls right underneath the top tier rung of movies like Wrath of Khan, Undiscovered Country, and First Contact. It's not as good as those, but it's definitely second tier if those three are first tier. So, great movie, would highly recommend it.
That is really interesting, because I've heard like sound in my environment that's not really a good movie, and that's interesting, because you say it's also different from the first two movies and that it's being more Star Trek-y. So I'm curious to see how those things match up. Like, if it's less action based, then maybe people were more attracted to that in the first movies, and the last one being more Star Trek-y, maybe that is more interesting to the original Star Trek fans. So
yeah, I mean, it's not you know, terrible like the second reboot movie was. I think we can all agree with that.
It was
painful to watch in spots. Yeah,
the whole science fell apart as well. Like,
yeah,
not so.
And there was great, you know, tiebacks to the original crew in this episode. And, you know, this kind of also goes for the dedication of the movie to Leonard Nimoy and Anton Yelchin, the two stars that were lost since the movie was filmed. So yep, there's that also as well. And it deals with that very nicely. So that was great as well. And, you know, I felt at this point, like, I can accept this crew now as a crew in the Star Trek universe. I couldn't do that with the first two movies.
So all in all, you would conclude that this movie went beyond expectations.
That's right. That's right.
It
went beyond expectations, and it is the reboot movie that the franchise deserved.
So the actual title should have been Star Trek Beyond Expectations.
Oh, no. We always expect high for Star Trek.
All right.
All right. So what have we been doing? You've been in Ireland, so not much time to play RS. You want to talk about your vacation at all? Or?
My vacation was, like, lots of nature, lots of, like, quiet stuff. Lots of green stuff, mountains too. I mean, that's basically what you expect from Ireland, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was there. There was also a lot of rain, which you also expect when you go to Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And then upon getting back on in the United Kingdom, there were a lot of traffic jams and more rain. So not so many surprises there, actually. Today I got back to work and started the mini quest for the Ark region. So, yeah, I'm going to check that out over the next week or so.
All right, that sounds good. As for me, my return to RS this week, I got, believe it or not, two consistent Garageo cards in 1 week after having, 4 weeks plus of a dry spell and not getting any of those cards, so that's excellent. Starting to unlock those potion recipes because I just can't stand dungeoneering. But aside from that, just been spending some time at the Wisp Colony, making some profit with the Incandescent Wisp because skilling GP doesn't always happen, so you got to take advantage of those opportunities. And aside from that, just building up supplies in the Ark. So that's about it for.
Sounds good, except for the dungeoneering being bad part.
Yeah, I don't like dungeoneering. You like dungeoneering?
Yeah, I do like dungeoneering. Oh.
Okay, well there you go. There's one difference on this show.
Yeah, we should have a discussion about it at some point.
Okay. You should listen to 577 then. We still called it not a skill.
Oh, I'm not going to listen then. It might be too upsetting.
Oh, you triggered that, eh?
Hmm.
No, but aside from that, last week spent some time in our mountains here, which is always pleasant to do. Caught some Pokemon along the way, but I'm not,
Oh dear.
What?
Oh, you're one of those.
Okay. I'm not nearly as good as anyone else out there. I've only caught 13 so far. So I'm not really taking it that seriously. But that's been me these past few weeks. Been nice having a break from the looking at the community side of RS, which was good I did, because we did have two things we had to analyze quite extensively today. So happy that we were able to do that with some sane heads here. So I believe that's it for this episode, unless there's anything else you'd like to mention.
No, not really, I'm afraid.
All right. Well, it's been RSBNB Update. Thank you for sharing your time with us, everyone. And we will be back next week to discuss, I assume, something wilderness related. See you then, everyone.
See you next week.